clock went off today, and the same song wasn't playing as yesterday. So I guess it's not Groundhog Day. I don't know what that means in terms of who saw what shadow, but I definitely saw shadows today, because yesterday and today in the Great Pacific Northwest, we had some really good sun, which was a huge, awesome break from the January that I seem to recall having rained 83 days, right? Dan, Justin, it's great to have you in the studio with me on Ask an Atheist on this February 3rd. We are actually recording a little bit post-Sunday with our usual. How did you guys feel about that sunny, sunny day?
Oh, it was nice, actually. It was nice enough outside to do a little bit of siding on a little construction project I'm working on, and actually had Justin's help with the project. So
nice. Okay.
The sun burned my skin. I don't like it.
Well, you know, it's hard after, you know, reaching January 147th to, you know, transition into a little bit of sunbreak here and there. But I don't know. I think overall January was kind of neat. It wasn't too terrible. We only had one little kind of like snowy, icy day that hasn't really done too much damage or inconvenienced us in any great ways. But it is great to see something other than just absolute dreary wetness.
A couple of snowflakes this morning on my way into work.
That's right.
Yeah,
it was kind of
a
little slushy here and there. Wipers took care of that, no problem.
Right.
So that was pretty cool. You know, I bet that in other places in the country, there is lots of snow. I don't know, maybe like Utah snows a lot, right? I kind of like think of that
right.
as, you know,
yeah.
a snowy place. And so we've actually got an email from Bradford from Utah, who writes, "Why do some people think Obama lost the popular vote in 2012? I see this from Trump supporters on social media. And I love this question because we are so ensconced in thinking about this year's coming election that it's
right.
like a breath of fresh air to think about the 2012 election. But at the same time, using a skeptical mind and a scientifically minded, you know, outlook to say, I didn't actually know that there were people that were convinced that Obama lost the popular vote in 2012. And Justin, I think you had a little bit of insight in this. Your corners of the internet bring light to this.
Right. There were some Trump criticizes Trump-style tweets from election year in 2012.
Wait, you mean that he's been inconsistent, like, prior to 2016?
Well, hold on to your tea, because if you think that was inconsistent, we're going to be here for a while. But yeah, there were some
she's literally holding her tea.
Right. There's some tweets from Trump that were talking about getting rid of the Electoral College and switching to a popular vote, because there were some early returns that showed Mitt Romney in the lead, but with Obama with an Electoral College victory. And Trump had a real hard time understanding how somebody could, like, lose the popular vote but still win their election.
He seemed to still continue having a hard time of that, considering he himself lost the popular vote, won the presidential election, and then still continued to decry the Electoral College through 2016 into 2017.
Yeah, that tweet aged like milk. So as far as why some Trump supporters are still talking about this, It's kind of an interesting thing. Like, the internet is kind of timeless, and I think a lot of what these Trump supporters are seeing are these kinds of tweets, and then there's like an equivocation there, some sort of moral equivocation, but they're not really doing their own Googling. They're just seeing the meme where this is misstated, and then that gets shared. So you have to, like, when you see a meme, even if you agree with it, it's important to just fact check the basic details. Like, this could be solved if they would just Google what were the election results in 2012. Like, one Google search solves that for them. And then you could disentangle where it's coming from.
I think one of the things that's important is to not just double check a meme, but you see a headline of something that gets shared or tweeted out. And then you realize, oh, wait, this is from June of 2017. It's not actually happening right now.
Right.
You know, it is truthful. There's an element of truth to it, but it's being presented in a way to suggest that something is happening in a way that isn't, like, aligned with reality. And that's a really important kind of thing that I certainly will fall victim to or fall prey to on occasion. And I have to be like, oh, you know what? Sometimes I'm the person pointing out, hey, just simmer down. This is from June of 2017. It's already had a SCOTUS ruling on it, or, you know, something like that. And sometimes I am the one being like, oh, it's still going on. Look at this, guys.
Yeah, it's an interesting experiential thing on social media because your timeline refreshes every day and you might be convinced to think that you're getting like the most new, best information constantly.
Speaking of Groundhog Day, if there ever was one.
It could just very well be that somebody had just seen this and then shared it recently, but it's old, and then it goes through the information ecosystem again and pops back up.
What's the best, most tactful way to say it when somebody in your feed has done this, where you see the story and you're like, wow, that story was debunked like 4 years ago. How do you even address this?
You want to know what I do?
Sure. What do you do? I mean, he did say, okay, what's the most tactful way to do that?
I do want to know.
It depends. Am I trying to dunk on the person or am I trying to be kind? I have done it before when I've had people that are just obstinate about trying to say that like the thing that is not right is right, and I just end up mocking them. But a better approach, a more mature approach, is to be like, hey, I don't know if you know this, but this isn't true. By way of an example, there were a couple of claims made about a video in 9/11 from the Pentagon, a video from the Las Vegas shooting, and video from Jeffrey Epstein's cell not being available. So I Googled, and I was able to invalidate 66% of the claims within 30 seconds.
Wow.
Ooh.
So I found the video of the Pentagon, the plane crashing into the Pentagon, and then I found the video of whatever the guy's name was, the Las Vegas shooter, walking in to the hotel, and it was just a couple of seconds on YouTube links. So I was just... I told him, like, hey, just so you know, this took me 30 seconds on Google. So I tried to like not be crass because that'll shut people off. Right. But at the same time, it's like, come on. We've got the repository for all human knowledge at our fingertips here.
Yes, but I'm too busy playing with kitty pictures and cat memes and things like that. That's what the repository of all human knowledge in our pockets is for, right?
I'm going to die on this hill. Fact check your cat memes.
Oh man. You mean Grumpy Cat wasn't actually
I'm just tired of seeing people say that their cat is the cutest when my cat is the cutest.
Got it. Okay.
You don't have a cat.
I'm
adopting cats. It's a metaphorical cat.
He resides with a cat. He cohabitates. There's a cat in his realm of living. Yeah. Dan's just jealous, just like thinking that his cat is the cutest.
I don't have
just
a cat
like that,
either.
A claim gets made, and then I got fat checked. There you go. That's how you do it.
All right.
So, but it is a good question, Brad from Utah. That's you know, it's good because it is surprising when you kind of see those things. I think that it depends in terms of when you're looking for something like tact. You know, Dan, you said, what's a tactful way to alert someone that they've shared something that's untrue or that it's out of date, or is that reflecting something that isn't quite aligned with reality or isn't showing the full picture? It's dependent on sort of what your goal is. You know, if Justin's saying, you know, you're going to mock them, it's probably for the other folks that are watching this, right? Sitting back with their popcorn and watching what happens. Or other passersby that's like, oh, I gotta fact check this because Justin's gonna call me to the carpet on this, right? Yeah. But if it's someone that you think, you know, is receptive and open to being corrected and values trying to put forth what is accurate and correct, I saw one that was recently shared that was about 900 plus migrants being detained in a room at the U.S.-Mexico border that is meant to have 125 capacity. And this is something that happened in a previous year. And so it's not like this is a recent occurrence and it was being shared as if it were. It is important, absolutely important, to draw attention to this. And this is still happening, but this particular event wasn't current. And right now, and you say, hey, here's a place where you can look and see most recent updates and where children are being moved and how people are being still separated at the border and where people are, going when they are waiting for their asylum cases, because we're not even letting them get into the U.S. at this point. And this comes from a time when, you know, when weather was allowing people to cross in this particular way. And in the case that I'm describing here, the person was thankful for that and said, oh, okay, because it provides, you know, an emotional call to action. But then if you're also wanting to align yourself with reality, there's that way to do so through that tactful sort of, you know, just, hey, you might think about this.
That's a better answer than mine. I'll take it.
Just a different answer than yours, Justin. So in terms of like, you know, all those politics and what we say on social media, there were some amazing things that were said by a recent evangelical pastor. I was just sort of like collating the just weird things that came up this week, and it kind of struck me that we've got some believers that really say the darndest things. They really do. Because evangelical pastor Rodney Howard Brown stated that Jesus would have made a whip and beat the crap out of former White House National Security Advisor John Bolton in a series of tweets that disparaged the man in response to Bolton's upcoming tell-all book. The New York Times reported that Bolton had planned to publish the claim that Trump had told of his desire to block aid to Ukraine until the nation had investigated the Bidens. Howard Brown called Bolton a slimeball of the highest order and regretted having missed the opportunity to knock Bolton's sorry butt through the door of the Oval Office into the Rose Garden, decrying Bolton's alleged disloyalty to the president in favor of alleged loyalty to the so-called deep state.
This is a fascinating turn of events.
This is what you choose to preach about?
Yeah.
Let's face it. Yeah. I mean, Twitter is a vehicle for preaching, especially if you're an evangelical pastor, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Jesus could kick your butt.
The heel turn on Bolton has been pretty incredible. He's been getting dragged through conservative media as if he's like a tool for the left or like a secret leftist or this deep state nonsense down here. And like, don't get me wrong, John Bolton is a career diplomat, bureaucrat, member of like Washington Republican conservative circles, actual conservative circles, not Trump circles, because that's, they haven't realized how far off the deep end they've gone.
That's just wacky circles. I don't even know if they're circling. They're kind of like this oblong shape of just like,
right.
you know, Family Circus, that old, you know, the funnies, right?
Yeah.
And right. And you would look at Billy's pathway through the yard, over right. This one, yeah. Under this broken fence board. That's Trump's political sort of arena, if right. You will.
Did somebody circle. Here solicit political aid from the Ukraine? I don't know. Not me.
So Bolton has, like, for his whole career, this is the guy who was famous for being the UN ambassador during the Bush administration, talking about just taking the top 10 floors off of the United Nations building because it's useless. He is absolutely a guy who is legitimately America dominance, American dominance, American imperialism, America first, before Trump tried to pull off his little con on people. And the people who are turning on him now are buying Trump's bait, hook, line, and sinker. That's just all that is. This guy was as far right as you could get and still have any kind of legitimacy.
Well, maybe that's why Jesus would have beat him up, you know, because, you know, Jesus was a hippie socialist that said, give up all your money and all of that.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of confused about this one. It's like, so there is this one time that Jesus makes a whip and beats moneylenders with it. And somebody actually pointed this out to me recently that, like, making a whip is actually a deliberate act. And I'd never actually considered the scripture before, but, you know, he makes a whip, basically a cat of nine tails, a rasp or a flog. You know, that's going to take you a few hours. You're going to have to sit down and be braiding leather lace for a while. And,
right.
You know, at the time they didn't have kangaroo lace, which is the ideal, but, you know, it's Jesus, so he probably had it on hand.
You're a craftsman, so you really do appreciate this, don't you?
And I am and have been a leather worker. I used to teach classes in leather work, and sitting down and braiding a whip is not just like a casual thing. It's not like, you know, tying your shoelaces and making a daisy chain. It's like, this is a very careful, very involved, very learned skill. So I'm just like picturing this instance where Jesus walks into this temple, kind of looks around, and is like, well, guess I got to make me a whip. Walks back outside, goes to some other merchants, buys a few spools of lace, and sits there just braiding away while all the apostles are like, what the heck is he doing? It looks like he's making a whip. This is sort of counter to all the scripture that he's thrown out so far. And when he's finally finished, you know, after sitting there for, you know, 4 hours or more making this whip, he goes into the temple, starts chasing people around with it, hitting moneylenders, flipping tables. This must have been the most surreal experience of the apostle's life. I mean, despite being around this guy who can perform miracles and raise the dead, this has got to be the thing that sticks out.
So in terms of, you know, comparing it to whipping someone's butt and throwing him into the Rose Garden straight from the Oval Office, we're kind of on par here. You're listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey, with Becky and Dan and Justin. You know, when I was saying that believers say really the strangest things and darndest things, especially when it comes to politics, I really wasn't kidding, because there's something that's a little bit more amazing than just saying, I wish that Jesus could have whipped you and then that I had kicked your butt into the Rose Garden, because we've got a right-wing talk show host who recently focused on the bizarre theory that Kobe Bryant's death was actually a ritual sacrifice orchestrated by the occultist witch known as none other than Mrs.
Hillary
Rodham Clinton. There we go. We get a little echo going here, don't we? Right. Really, this is someone that thinks that Hillary Clinton is an occultist witch that orchestrated Kobe Bryant's death. So we got Chris McDonald. He welcomed this guest, Corey Daniel, to his show, McFiles. He backtracked at one point, actually, and claimed that his assertion that Hillary Clinton would have had the power to use witchcraft to bring down the helicopter that Bryant and others were riding when it crashed last month was merely just a food for thought question. The National Transportation Safety Board is expected to release preliminary findings on the cause of the crash in the next week. I'm not holding my breath that they will suspect or deduce witchcraft was the cause of this tragic helicopter crash.
I'm just picturing Hillary Clinton in the full black robes with the pointed hat and everything, you know, sending her flying monkeys out into the sky. Fly, my pretties, fly! Them attacking the helicopter and just...
Maybe it's more of like a Glinda the Good Witch, and she's in like this big poofy gown, you know? There could be that, and she's got a crown on her head.
Yeah, this is like a merging of the Hillary Clinton death count conspiracy theory and the...
I'm not actually laughing at that. I'm sorry. I'm still laughing at Glinda the Good Witch as Hillary Clinton.
and the Democrats are like demonically possessed InfoWars conspiracy theory.
It's really the bizarrest melding of things that I could I could really think of, because this guy, this conservative talk show host, also will like indulge the hyper religious and evangelical thing. So then to also sort of rub elbows with this occultist guy who's like, oh, I know that the Clintons have witchcraft power. It's like, it's very strange. And
way to bring it home.
I mean, in total fairness, a house did fall on her over Benghazi.
Ouch.
Crickets.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Oh boy.
That hurt. that really hurt. Was that the best food for thought that you could throw my way?
Sorry,
down?
That's all I got in this story.
Well, it's all you got. I mean, we can look at, I mean, associating witches with badness, associating women with witchy badness, associating in any way the demise of 9 people, right? And this is not just Kobe Bryant and his daughter. This is a whole, you know, a whole sort of extended, you know, family friend network,
right,
that we're all very close with each other and doing some amazing things for, you know, promoting youth athletes and athleticism and things like that. It's a very weird thing to wrap into the Clintons.
Yeah, it really is kind of, it's super gross to kind of pile on the whole history of like women being excluded from like the medical fields and then those kinds of midwifery type practices.
You're talking about how women were sort of like how
that
was
got, right, melded together, and then to kind of put that too onto this tragedy that happened. The best information I've seen from it so far was like, because it was heavy fog, like that's the best that I've seen, like a tragic accident, and then to what, like score political points against,
well, I don't know, a
private citizen Hillary Clinton
points here,
right? Who is who is not currently running for any office?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that doesn't save or stop anyone in Trump's weird oblong dotted circle from continuing to bring up things like Hillary Clinton. And I feel like this is sort of this, you know, between bringing up 2012 election, between bringing up Hillary Clinton as a supposed witch, these are all things that like the current Trump administration is just really confused with, not only reality, but what they want their non-reality to be. Like, yeah, they're confused about what propaganda they want to put forth. And maybe that is the whole scheme, is just confuse the heck out of everybody,
right,
with whatever weird propaganda. Just throw it. And it, maybe it'll stick to the wall. Maybe it'll be like, you know, the paper airplane with the point that ends up sticking in the ceiling tile and then falling on you when you're lecturing in front of a bunch of middle school. This is only me and my actual job.
Yeah, right? That's only you.
Were you?
This is your own personal serendipity.
Okay. This is okay. All right. This is my own propaganda.
Cheeto dust and hairspray and spray tan and,
oh god, the Cheeto dust also happens in high schools too. You get kids eating the Takis and the hot Cheetos and go wash your hands before you use the school laptop.
And you know what's worse? It's dollar store Cheetos. How's that for food for thought?
You said food in the same sentence as dollar store Cheetos.
Yeah, dollar store Cheetos, then
I'm
food
confused.
For thought.
I'm confused. Yeah,
dollar
here.
Store Cheetos are food.
Okay, true.
They're not Cheeto Cheetos. Just like, oh, this guy isn't like, he doesn't have an actual,
he's
idea,
not like president.
No, you know?
Right.
No, the radio show host guy. Like he said, food for thought. And it's like, but it's not an actual idea. It's right, junk food.
Well, it's I'm just asking the question. Right. No, you're actually positing it and just putting a question mark at the end of it.
What if she was a lizard person witch responsible for Benghazi and has a secret murder list and is running a child sex ring out of a pizza parlor?
Yeah. For someone,
I'm just asking,
for
what if she
was? Someone that has like maybe been an ascetic monk for the last 16 years to hear that for the first time, they'd be like, whoa, 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 that's too heavy-handed of a weird made-up thing you actually did there. Except we all know that this is a conspiracy theory that actually existed.
That was way too occult, and I meditated myself into a point of mummification for 5,000 years. And that's just too much.
Back to reality a little bit. Let's see. No, we're going to stay in the land of fantasy. Dan, I am just bequeathing this wonderful gem of a story to you because it has to do with fantasy and fish and seafaring, and it's like a tailor-made story for you. You ready for it?
My heart is soaring.
Environmental planners in Scotland have turned down a proposal to build a 12-cage salmon farm near the Isle of Skye, in part because residents were concerned that fishermen could be lured to their deaths by fairies. An organization calling itself, and I'll do my best attempt at this, at Scottish Gaelic, which is not my forte in any respects whatsoever, but the organization calling itself Friends of the Eileen Lodigary Fairies presented a letter that claimed that the waters surrounding the Isle of Skye were home to a mystical sea fairy that rises to the ocean surface on a moonlit night once per century. Campaigners feared that the steel wiring of the salmon cages would confuse and harm the creatures, causing them to melt, and might also endanger fantastic water birds known as brewbrees. Lobbying and tourist groups also posed opposition, and the plan was scrapped after a 6-hour hearing. Dan?
Oh, this is fairly consistent. Yeah. So, in the mythology of the British Isles, There are a race called the Tuatha Dé Danann, the children of the goddess Danann.
Okay, did you just spring your own Scottish Gaelic on me or something like this?
Irish Gaelic, but yeah. Okay. Anyway, so they're basically every mythical creature is sort of a member of this race. They're like the X-Men of magical things. Leprechauns, banshees, selkies, they're all sort of in the same race of magical creatures. Anyhow, one of the interesting things about them, and one of the reasons that they don't interfere with humans as much as they used to, has to do with the metal iron. To the Tuatha Dé Danann, iron has never cooled from the fires of creation. It is still burning hot to them. This has to do with why blacksmiths were considered sort of magical. It's also why you put a horseshoe over the door.
That's why you trained to be a blacksmith. You wanted to be a magician. You just couldn't let Hillary Clinton be her occult witch all by her lonesome.
Oh, no, it was a full-on security tactic. I've done enough things in my life that would offend one fey or another that I basically need to be surrounded by chunks of iron at all times. No. So anyway, the whole steel wires thing, that's actually pretty consistent with the mythology that, yeah, that would disrupt, confuse, and potentially even harm any mythical creatures that were trying to rise through these waters up the shore and through the heather onto the lands. But, you know, there's other problems with salmon farms.
Oh, and I'm sure that you're about to tell us all about them.
So what we're talking about here, and in pretty much every salmon farm, is Salmo salar, the Atlantic salmon. They're great big fish. They act a lot like Pacific salmon, where they go up the rivers and spawn, but Atlantic salmon don't die afterwards, typically. They are indigenous to the British Isles. They absolutely belong there. So if there was a healthy population of Atlantic salmon that just was doing their regular native thing offshore and swimming up the rivers to spawn, that would be great. And that's how things were in Europe for quite a long time. And in fact, the east coast of North America and Canada. Canada is in North America. Pardon me. Anyhow, turns out Atlantic salmon were so sought after because of their great size that there are no remaining healthy populations of Atlantic salmon.
Really?
Anywhere in the world. They are universally threatened, endangered, critically endangered, and in many runs extinct. But Atlantic salmon are relatively easy to farm. They have a very high growth rate. That makes them an extremely profitable type of livestock to raise. The problem is, when you raise them in these big net pens offshore, you end up having all these animals concentrated together in the same place. That means they become a breeding ground for disease, and diseases that also affect the wild populations of Atlantic salmon, and in fact Pacific salmon, which are a totally separate genus. A lot of these parasites and diseases can jump from one to the next.
So I'm thinking kind of like large factory chicken farms, when you have lots of hens all together, and that's a breeding ground for disease, hence the like widespread use of antibiotics in a lot of factory farms, right? In order to sort of antifungals, antibiotics, to kind of prevent that. Couldn't you just like, I don't know, dump, you can't dump a bunch of antibiotics in the salmon pens, can you?
Can and do.
Seriously.
That becomes another problem.
But
antibiotic resistant bacteria.
On land, you can have a chicken farm and deal with, okay, antibiotic resistant bacteria there. But you're talking about the ocean. This, I imagine, disperses to like all ocean creatures.
It absolutely does. There's also a number of endemic viruses that can jump from one salmonid to another cross genus. There's a number of physical parasites, parasitic copepods, frequently referred to as sea lice, that are parasitic on the outer bodies, and then a separate species that are parasitic on the gills, actually several dozen species of these bloodsuckers. And it becomes a real problem, not just in the salmon farms, not just for the health of the fish that are being raised in those pens, but also for the health of the fish that have to swim near them. See, the best place to put one of these salmon farms is a place that has a very high level of water flow. So you want to be near a river mouth, which means the smolts of the native species of salmon that are coming through there,
and
whether they're Atlantic
are, what, the
or Pacific. Yeah, those are the ones that are making their way out into the estuaries, out towards the ocean. So these are just little fish, you know, less than a hand's breadth. Well, now they have to swim through this area that is absolutely flooded with antibiotic resistant bacteria, with massive populations of endemic viruses, with massive populations of these parasitic sea lice. An adult salmon can harbor 30 to 60 of these sea lice without it being a big issue. A smolt can harbor one or two before the caloric cost will kill it. So a lot of people are not buying, you know, wild caught salmon because they think that salmon farming is, you know, the more environmentally respectful or responsible way to go. It's actually not. Salmon farms hurt wild salmon, both Atlantic and Pacific salmon, much, much worse than actually harvesting the species that you're after in the first place. There's a little bit more to it. It doesn't just hurt the salmon and the salmonids. When you have 100,000 salmon in a pen, they're creating about the same amount of raw sewage on the daily as 10,000 humans.
Wait. So 10,000 humans pooing is basically what you get from a fish farm.
Right.
These are really big fish.
They are big fish. Atlantic salmon, when they're at the size for harvest, they're over a meter long. They're a big fish. They're similar in size to the Pacific Chinook salmon, which you're probably familiar with on this side of the country. They're a big fish. They're a meaty fish that makes them very profitable, but they're also a rather wasteful fish. They create huge amounts of feces and urea. But when you're in a pen, rather than migrating throughout the whole North Pacific and North Atlantic oceans, that waste is very concentrated. So they pretty much create a biohazard for everything else in the area, with bacteria, with disease, with raw waste. Now we can address what it takes to feed them.
Well, clearly it's the fishermen, because the fairies are going to lure the fishermen to their deaths, and then all of the salmon can just like feast on the fishermen that were lured by the fairies, right?
If only it were that simple.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately, you have to go out and feed them a mostly carnivorous diet.
Wait, just a disclaimer. No fourth grader shall present a food chain poster to their life sciences teacher.
Unless
featuring,
it's me.
featuring a fairy in the middle of your food chain. All right, continue on.
So in order to feed these fish and get them up to size, you have to feed them about five times their body weight in other fish, which means for every pound of salmon that you're going to get, you're going to have to go out and get 5 pounds of herring or smelt or lanternfish or what have you. So you're already at a caloric loss here. You could just be eating the small fish and only having to take out 1/5 of the amount that you have to. But instead, you go out with these purse seine boats that take an entire school of bait fish in one haul and then grind it into a paste, dry it into pellets. So now you're losing water, you're losing nutrients, you're losing proteins just in the drying process. Granted, some farms will mix this with nutritional yeast. Some of them will even mix it with genetically modified nutritional yeast, which is kind of an interesting thing. Believe it or not, it's the more sustainable way to go. But at the end of the day, you could have eaten a pound of herring. You could have eaten a pound of smelt and actually gotten more nutrients, more omega-3s and omega-6s, more protein, more oil, more fat, more of the stuff that you want when you're eating seafood in the first place, than to go with this horribly destructive practice of the farming of salmonids. Now, there are some ways of doing it right. I have gone into detail on that in previous episodes, so I'm not going to keep going here.
So what you're saying, though, at the end of the day, despite my atheism, if I wanted to stay connected to my cultural seafood eating heritage, 'tis better to have the gefilte fish than it is to have the smoked lox.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, it is.
All right.
And an interesting thing about this is one of the greatest protections that we have working in salmon conservation is actually indigenous beliefs. People are more ready to protect someone's religious rights than their economic rights.
Interesting angle on that. Okay.
So as far as the fairies preventing the Scottish salmon farm from happening offshore, go fairies. I'm with it.
All right. So you're willing to sort of like use the means to justify the ends.
Sure.
All right.
Who has more right to say what happens in this place? The people who've lived there, the people who belong there, the people whose traditional beliefs are tied into the environment, or a large company that wants to make a profit by exploiting and destroying a shoreline?
Well, believers may say the darndest things, and I guess sometimes the darndest things might actually lead to a little bit of a preservation of our ecology and less damage to our ecosystem. Yes, Justin.
Especially when that industry has already done such a good job.
Right.
Destroying the ecosystem.
Exactly. I mean, this is not an experiment. This is just another expansion in what we already know is a horribly destructive practice.
Right.
Well, in terms of other weird beliefs and practices and things like that, I want to take us to Canada, because this is one that's been puzzling me. It's a little bit of kind of an old story, but haven't gotten to talk about it on Ask an Atheist yet. A Canadian appeals court has ruled that the Church of Atheism, you heard that right, the Church of Atheism of Central Canada, failed to meet the bar for charitable status granted to religious organizations. Under Canada's Income Tax Act, groups founded for the purpose of the advancement of religion or certain other purposes beneficial to the community can be granted charitable status. While the Church of Atheism was found to, quote, preach atheism, the court ruled that it lacked a belief system, which was one of the three essential elements required to qualify as a religion in Canada. The Church of Atheism stated that their belief was mainstream science, but the court found that mainstream science was neither particularly specific nor precise. When the church argued that an authority similar to the Bible wasn't needed for religious incorporation, that's the third thing that was needed, the court took that as further proof that the church had no comprehensive system for faith and worship. And finally, the court ruled that the church's activities weren't beneficial to the community since they were for their members only and were not rehabilitative nor therapeutic.
Huh.
Okay, so you're a club. And if you have a belief system and you're a benefit to the community and you have some kind of like authoritative book, then you get to be a religion in Canada. But Buddhists are religious and their religion in Canada. They don't have a particular like God book Bible thing. I mean, they've got some teaching.
So is like a D&D party going to be a religion?
That's what right. Like one of my questions, like a D&D group, a gaming group will have a better chance of being scored as religious in Canada than the Church of Atheism, because they've got certain beliefs. They've got an entire rule set, protocols for everything. They've got guiding books. They've got mythology. They've got rituals. They've got practices, and they're beneficial for the community.
They've got a god.
D&D can be pretty rehabilitative, I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you're investing in each other, you're following a particular thing, you've got a social order of things going on, it could be therapeutic,
yeah.
I lost my friend group, oh, join our gaming group, you know? I mean, it can sprout relationships between people.
It sounds to me like the Canadian authorities that set this up, we need to maybe address the standards by which they are implementing this tax law on potential nonprofit groups.
You know, before you mentioned D&D, Justin, I was like going to say that the Satanic Temple should really expand up into Canada, which is also part of North America, and can really like, you know, there's an opportunity here. But we don't even need the Satanic Temple to say we as a non-theistic religious organization are wanting incorporation in Canada. I'm going with the D&D. So, hey, Canadian listeners, I know you're there. We got Left at the Valley folks. We got folks in BC who listen to us, Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. Please let us know, like, if there or when there is a D&D group or some other kind of gaming group or a LARPing organization that, hey, you know what, Dan, you were, I don't know if this is so public, you had some other kinds of activities that had protocols and rituals and traditions. And
that's right.
And you want to tell us about that? I mean, could that count as a religion in Canada, you think?
You're talking about medieval reenactment, is that right?
Yes, yes, that's exactly.
It's been many, many years, but you know, there were formalized rituals and protocols. In fairness, the rituals didn't really have much to do with religion, more to do with ceremony, I guess.
Well, it doesn't need to have any kind of, you know, religious belief to be apparently, you know.
And we certainly had handbooks for various realms of endeavor within the community.
Were you beneficial to the community? Did you provide a benefit? Like, were you therapeutic or rehabilitative, or were you
exercise?
You were a 501c3 nonprofit.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Exercise, getting people out in the sun.
Okay, so
yeah,
Pokemon Go.
Granted,
fans.
Covered in armor, which is like the ultimate sunblock, but at least outside.
Medieval reenactors,
gets the sweat going.
D&D players, like, tell us of your attempts to be incorporated as a religion in Canada, because I am fascinated by this, and I think that you'd have a pretty good chance, despite Church of Atheism of Central Canada perhaps not sadly, being denied the ability to be a religion in Canada. You are listening to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey and with Becky and with Justin and with Dan. We still got a little bit left in us. Stay tuned for some more things after the break. Hello, and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. I'm serious that we have some stuff left in us, but I want to take us to our listeners for a moment, because we've got an inquiry from John from New Jersey and an inquiry from Brian from California. And I'm saying them at the same time because they're rather similar. John says, "Hello, I'm a new atheist. I was wondering if you have any advice for me to telling my conservative Christian family. Thank you for your time." And Brian very similarly writes, "I'm nervous about telling my conservative family that I'm atheist. What would you recommend?" Oh, it's been a while since we talked about these kinds of things. And I've got reason to believe that both of these listeners are above the age of majority, but they're just inferences based on some of the things that they have written in that I would like to be able to keep private. So I think we address both of these things. If you are an adult or young adult, or if you are still a teen that's kind of seeking and finding yourself not believing, what are your guys' ideas on this?
That was going to be my first question was, when you're trying to think about the logistics, it's important to know how old the person is. Cause if it's like they're both conservative Christian families or conservative Christian and then a conservative family, the implication there being that they're Christian, some kind of evangelical or something like that. So if you're under the age of 18 or if you don't have the financial resources or the network of support around you, it's going to be anything, any kind of non-conformist lifestyle or belief system is going to make your life much more difficult. I would almost feel badly saying this, but I kind of feel like if you're in a position where you feel like your family is going to react that badly and you don't have a good way out, almost don't until you can have a good way out.
I think it's similar to the kinds of things we've been saying at Ask an Atheist for years now. Don't until you can. And there's lots of things that we have beliefs about. And it's that time of wrestling with like being authentic and true to yourself, but then also making sure that you have existential security, right? That there are so many challenges in this world. And when one of the challenges might be finding yourself flat on your bum with nothing in your pockets and all of your possessions, you know, being kept from you and any of those kinds of relationships, that can be really, really hard and very scary. At the same time, like you said, Justin, any kind of nonconformist idea or lifestyle or anything like that, sometimes when you allow a family member to say, "I'm still the same person that you loved yesterday when we were sitting on the couch binge watching The Good Place together," right? You're still the same person that you're proud of for graduating with a 3.62 GPA despite my taking all really hard classes. I'm still the same person that has babysat my younger siblings and cousins for the past 6 years. Despite having this kind of belief that you might disagree with, that can be one of those bridges. Dan, what do you think?
This is a difficult one for me because it's something that I've never really had to face. My wife's family are very religious, but they're also very accepting. And so the sort of like the slow transition from her and I leaving the church to seeking, to being agnostic, to being atheist and working on an atheist podcast and radio show, nobody really batted an eye. There were a few times that my father-in-law said, you know, "I'm a little concerned about some of this," but I think just like you said, you know, we showed enough consistency in behavior and we talk about altruism and we talk about kindness and, you know, we're 99.999% on the same page about everything important. So it's a hard one for me to go into with any sort of advice. I would reiterate that if you feel that you might lose your community, that you might lose your financial support, that you might be in physical danger, I'd hate to say it, but keep it under your hat until those things are remedied. I would also say probably the best thing to do at this point is find your community, become a part of that community, get active in that community, so that if things go absolutely south, you will still have friends, you will still have support, you will still have the love of your fellows.
I think there have been in the last 20 years some really neat publications that have come out when you're looking at Disbelief 101, Young Person's Guide to Atheism, and Mom, Dad, I'm an Atheist. There's lots of neat things that are written mostly in the English language that have addressed these kinds of things. And they're from a perspective of maybe teens or young adults, people in their 20s. But this is a thing that sometimes can strike an individual, you know, later in their sort of personal adult development as well. And I don't want to think that perhaps, you know, John or Brian aren't in their 30s or 40s. Maybe their conservative family is their spouse and, you know, their children or their extended network there. And for those kinds of things, there's some amazing stories that can be seen through the lens and through the eyes of those that have gone through the Clergy Project, which is not just conservative, you know, religious individuals, but religious leaders who find themselves realizing that they are atheists or that they are not believing in the religion that they have founded their lives around. And those are some really interesting stories and perspectives that I think might offer some insight into really that delicate sort of dance. Because it's hard. I keep coming back to, like you said, Justin, when you're going against the mainstream beliefs of your family in any kind of thing. You know, atheism is just that one question about whether you believe in God or not. But if through your lack of belief in God, it also means that you're not going to agree on 99.9% of the important stuff, like in Dan's family, that's going to lead to a lot of other questions. Does your conservative family think that two women shouldn't be able to get married, or that, girls and boys shouldn't be able to be in the same room unaccompanied without chaperones and must go through courtship? Are they in favor of modest clothing to the point where young people don't even know about their own bodies and what normal bodies look like? Those are all really super difficult things to get around beyond just that one question of whether right. you believe that there's evidence for a God or not.
Yeah, there's as far as like very on the ground, like practical advice. I mean, yeah, like Dan, you said it, find your community. It can be really hard to do that. When you're young and you don't have like any work experience or even things that you never had to think about before, like where's your birth certificate? How do you obtain a driver's license? How do you get and maintain auto insurance? How do you fill out your tax forms? These are all kind of the kind of things that you're going to need to know that nobody's going to teach you. And if you're in a position where this is the kind of thing that you're thinking about doing and you feel like you might not have the support, I would suggest you try looking up online what kind of things does a young adult or young person need to know? And then you might be able to find yourself in a position that's a little bit better than if you're the kind of person who just comes out swinging and ends up with nowhere really to land.
And some of these are amazing questions that that just local community librarians will go to bat for you. It almost feels like cheating, but they will help you do the research and then find it there for you. And so that's an amazing resource also. And just in general, if you're finding yourself breaking from a religious faith, start exploring what you do believe in, right? It's just that one question of whether you think there's a God or not. All right, if you don't think there's a God, so now what? So I don't know. I like the library for that. I do want to bring us to a girl who did come out against those particular conservative Christian beliefs. I don't even know if she's an atheist or not, but a private Christian school in Kentucky has actually expelled a ninth grader after discovering social media pictures where the 15-year-old was wearing a rainbow sweater and blowing out birthday candles on a rainbow frosted cake. Yes, shock. Louisville's Whitefield Academy claimed that the photo of Kayla Kenny was evidence of a posture of morality and cultural acceptance contrary to that of the school's beliefs, and that she was being expelled for lifestyle violations. Whitefield Academy stated that Kayla had violated the student code of conduct numerous times in the past 2 years, and while Kayla's mother, Kimberly Alford, acknowledged that her daughter was caught with jewel pods at school, Kayla had been a model student since entering probation.
I want to address something here.
Oh, do you?
Yeah. So she's being given the boot for cultural acceptance, for a posture of cultural acceptance. This is the worst self-call out I can imagine on the part of the school. We don't accept other cultures. Yes. To the point where we will kick a student out of our school for accepting other cultures. This is extreme. This is extremely messed up.
So we don't even know if Miss Kayla is an atheist or not, but I'm feeling like maybe the Christian school wasn't the best place for you, kiddo, and I'm really wishing you best of luck in your new public school. And hey, mama, if you want to give your kiddo a birthday party that has cake of assorted colors that happens to have rainbow that suggests to the random school that you were probably paying too much tuition for,
the random school that is stalking your social media.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it really is that, you know, it also looks like, okay, so kiddo had maybe a little more severe case of teenager than other 14 and 15 year olds. And so maybe she was a little bit rebellious here and there. Maybe she got caught with some jewel pods and some smoking. Again, these are kinds of things that are expected of teens. You know what is also expected of teens? Smiling happily and blowing out candles on her birthday.
Yep.
Right?
You know what I wouldn't expect?
What's that?
Some sort of school administrator to be stalking a teenage girl's Facebook.
It really speaks of, I'm looking for any kind of thing that I can put in the file to finally kick her out. Right? You're building that file.
That's the part that stuck out to me, because like, this is a 15-year-old girl.
Right.
And like, it seems as though her mother is supportive and backing her up on this, which is good. But this 15-year-old just got a life lesson here, and that's that some people in this world are just gonna just kick you for now, no good reason.
Now, you did a little bit of background digging into this particular case, and I want to say that normally for like minor children, we wouldn't necessarily use their name, but Kayla has been vocal about this, and her mother has also been vocal about revealing like what the kiddo's name is. But it's meant that there are some other individuals who seem to agree with this posture of cultural acceptance that's contrary to our school's beliefs that are on that kind of side, and seem to think that they were correct and right in tossing this girl from their school, right?
Yeah, I was able to find another resource that I will not name, and an article that I'm not all that interested in going into. But they wanted to tell you the real story about what happened behind this student, and how it was anti-Christian bias in the media that had blown the story up, and it was being made into a whole other thing that it wasn't at all. So I in good faith read the article, and it was absolute bupkis.
So
just Instagram posts from a 15-year-old girl that were being used in a hit piece article against a 15-year-old girl in the defense of a private religious educational institution. Like, just take a step back, breathe it in.
Well, I'll breathe in the birthday candle smoke because happy birthday, Kayla. We're glad that you have reached 15 and are still smiling happily. One of the things that she had, you know, had this terrible record on for her school record was apparently bullying. And I'm just thinking, this is just emblematic of when someone says, hey, this person is accepting of LGBTQ individuals and will elevate individual status by celebrating things with rainbow and pride flags and buttons and pins, and being accepting and supportive and celebratory. Suddenly someone who thinks that being queer is an abomination against God is suddenly the target of bullying. Right, Someone else's celebration does not make you a victim.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was in the article that was taken as proof that this girl deserved what she had gotten, was that she had the audacity to be a 15-year-old child and decorate things with rainbows and other types of slogans.
I don't know about you guys, but when the Indian community in America celebrates Diwali, I don't feel particularly threatened in my atheism. When someone wants to say Merry Christmas to their other individuals and go caroling, it's quite pretty. I am secure enough in my own beliefs that I am not going to pose as the victim of bullying and harassment, and especially not at the hands of a 15-year-old kid.
But if you're gonna use that religion to hit somebody else with it, then we're gonna have a problem with that.
We are definitely gonna have problems with that, but you know, we won't hear because we have the postures of morality and cultural acceptances that are gladly contrary to Whitefield Academy's beliefs. You've been listening to Ask an Atheist. Thank you so much, Dan.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Justin.
You're very welcome.
Our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield. Email us at questions@atheist.radio and find us on Facebook and Twitter. See you guys next week.